Hello, this is Janet Michael. In addition to hosting The Valley Today each weekday from 12:30 to 1 on the River 953, I also produce podcasts. And I'm excited to introduce you to a new podcast series in partnership with Rappahannock Electric Cooperative called We Are REC. Every week, we'll be releasing a new podcast where we interview different people from REC about a host of different topics. We'll get tips for saving money on your electric bill. We'll talk about renewable energy and the impact it can have in our communities. We'll even get some behind-the-scenes info about what happens when the power goes out in a storm. We're going to talk to linemen, energy advisors, board members, even the CEO. Don't miss out on information about community grants, scholarships, REC-hosted events, and more. Get every single episode as they're released on our website under the podcast tab at theriver953.com, or you can subscribe for free in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or on Spotify, anywhere you listen to a podcast. Just search for We Are REC. We are in the studio today with Louis O'Berry. He is an energy management advisor with Rappahannock Electric Cooperative. And Louis, this is going to be the show where we dig deep and we get personal. Are you ready for that?
I think I'm ready, Janet.
Well, I want to start with an easy question for you. So what are some of the common misconceptions that people have about saving energy?
Well, Janet, let's talk about some things that are in the hierarchy, what we talked about, the items in the house that are using the most energy, and then the items in the house that aren't using as much energy. So there's ways to save on both ends of the spectrum, but there are some misconceptions out there. There are folks that will do things on a regular basis and just have this assumption that it's saving them energy, but it's really not. But there are some pretty big ones in the winter months that folks will do, and they'll just have a conception that if they heat the house a certain way or they do something a certain way, it's going to save them energy versus running their heat pump or their conventional system that they have in the house. So there's a lot of things out there that people will do that don't necessarily help them as much as they think it does. It can actually hurt them more than they think it does. So let's talk about the big stuff first.
Okay.
And then maybe the smaller, lesser impact items kind of beyond that. And then let's also dig in a little bit about misconceptions about doing things to your house. So energy improvements or, your house is built a certain way and that makes you think that it's more airtight, but it's not necessarily so just because of the construction. So there's a lot of misconceptions when it comes to saving energy, when it comes to what people think that they actually have regarding their finished product, of their house, whether it's built in, in an earlier era or of today's standards. So there's a lot of things out there. So digging into that a little bit, let's talk a little bit about the heating side of things, because heating the house is obviously for most of our members is a large portion of their annual energy use and a big portion of those winter bills during those peak months. So let's talk about open burning fireplaces. That's a big one.
Really?
People will think that if they run that open burning fireplace, open hearth, open burning fireplace, that it's going to save them energy and it's going to heat the house. It's really a net negative energy benefit with burning an open fire inside your house. It does not do anything significantly to heat the house.
So fireplaces really are a cosmetic feature of a house.
They are. I mean, you get the ambiance. Yes, you get a small amount of radiant heat coming out of the fireplace if you're sitting there directly in front of it. But the facts are around this is that what does fire need to burn?
Air.
Okay, among some other things. Yeah. It needs fuel. It needs oxygen. When the fire is burning and it's using up the air inside the house to burn, where do you think it's getting the rest of its air from?
Pulling in from outside and cracks
outside
and crevices of windows
little,
and doors.
Little, right,
and,
that's right. Just a little bit of
it's like a vacuum.
That's right. So not to get technical, because I don't really want to get technical. I want to have fun today, Janet. I'm not getting technical today, okay? If you look at it, an open burning fireplace can use up the air inside the house in a very short period of time. It will actually create a large amount of air change per hour to support the fire. And a lot of times, if your thermostat is fairly close, like if it's in a living area or something like that, it'll actually influence the system to come on and actually run more because of the infiltration. It's kind of a double-edged sword. I mean, some members don't have a choice. They have to burn an open fire. They have to do some different things.
Now, is it any different for a wood stove?
Wood stoves are going to be a little bit more efficient because they burn a little bit better. It's contained. So even an insert in a fireplace or even a freestanding wood stove, you're going to get a lot more heat out of that.
Okay, because that's always been my husband's argument, that we have a fireplace, we never use it, but his argument is we're going to put a wood stove in there and it's going to heat this whole house.
Absolutely.
And I'm like,
no, I mean, the wood stoves do pretty good. I mean, if you locate it in the right place in the house, if you got a, basement first floor scenario and you want to, you run the stove in the basement.
Because heat rises, so it will,
well,
in theory.
Let's not get too technical,
Janet. At me, I'm jumping ahead
warm
of
air,
the misconceptions.
Warm air. Warm air rises because it's lighter than cold air, but heat flows multiple directions. So heat does not. I know we thought we learned that in school. We thought that was in our mind forever.
Yeah.
But heat flows multiple directions, and warm air rises because it is more buoyant or lighter than cold air.
So look, that you just knocked out two misconceptions in one tip.
We debunked that. So you can't beat physics there, Janet.
Right.
You just can't do it. So the best advice there, when it comes to that, misconception with open burning fireplaces, if you want to do it, that's fine. If you just know that in most cases, just the open burning hearth fireplace just doesn't give you enough heat benefit or enough energy benefit there to justify doing it on a regular basis. There's some people that have cabins up in the mountains that just like to have the open burning fire, and they will heat some, but you have to realize what's going on, that the surrounding factors around that, and they are, in fact, they use up a lot of air to operate, and they get the balance of it from outside after that's over with.
Well, and that doesn't even factor in just the physical labor of having them and having to have wood
that's
and to
right.
keep it nearby and to
that's
keep
right.
feeding the fire, and that's just way too labor
right.
intensive for me.
So, like I said, the fireplace isn't capable of heating the whole floor plan. So you have rooms that are getting cold, you have hallway corridors where thermostats are typically located at for central systems and homes that have both. And a lot of times that will, with an all-electric heat pump, when it comes back on, it's got to do some
it's
recovering.
It's got to work double time, yeah.
And now it's going to bring on that auxiliary electric heat for periods of time. So that's kind of a big one in the wintertime that we talk about a lot regarding open burning fireplaces specifically. And just a little trivia there, remember the wing back chair?
Yeah.
Well, that was why the wing back chair was created, was because it would sit in front of the fire and it would block the draft that's been the inrush of cold air coming.
I am impressed. I cannot begin to tell you how impressed I am.
There's your trivial trivia for the day.
Wow. See, there you go. And here I always thought you were just another pretty face.
Oh, my goodness. Good thing they can't see me, Janet.
I know, right? That's why this is a podcast.
Right? That's right.
We're not videotaping today's segment. So what else do you got?
Washing dishes by hand. A lot of people will think that if I continually wash dishes by hand in the sink, if you have a dishwasher and it's an Energy Star dishwasher, using the dishwasher is going to use less energy typically than what it will for you to wash dishes on a daily basis in the sink because of the amount of hot water that you're actually using to do that. The dishwasher does it much more effectively. It uses less water and it's going to use less hot water to do so as well. Now, there is kind of a caveat. A lot of people will use the heat dry cycle on mm-hmm. a dishwasher, which is where the most energy is used. So if you don't use the heat dry cycle, that would be the best option there. But typically washing dishes by hand, you will use and waste more water and more hot water than you will when using the dishwasher. And most homes do have a dishwasher now, for the most part. They're just not, it's just better to use the dishwasher on a regular basis.
Okay, so fireplace is bad, dishwasher's good.
Right, but stay away from that heat dry cycle.
Yes.
That's nothing but an electrical element. We talked about electric mm-hmm. heat over and over again. It is what it is. It's a trade. One unit of energy, one unit of heat, that's all you get. So it doesn't matter what type of electrical element it is, whether it's the coffee pot, the heater in the dryer, the heater element in the dishwasher, your water heater, the strips in the backup air handler for your furnace and your heat pump, it's all the same.
It makes sense, too, because, from a dishwasher perspective, it's just a matter of changing your behavior. So if you turn it on before you go to bed at night, don't use the heat dry cycle, and the dishes are going to sit in there clean overnight. They're going to be dry
right.
by the time you need them, either the next morning or the next day when you get home from work and are ready to unload
exactly.
it. So it's just a behavioral change that could potentially save you a decent amount of money.
Exactly. And shifting gears a little bit, we talked a lot about the house and the system and how it operates and how it communicates. We've talked about that in some prior podcast and some prior even live sessions. But when we talk about forced attic ventilation, a lot of people love to use gable fans, forced ventilation on their house just to try to drop the attic temperature with the intent of potentially protecting the shingles and lessening the temperature difference between the attic space and the living space. Well, that's all fine, but you have to remember, if your house is not air sealed properly,
if the envelope is not properly sealed.
Listen to Janet go.
That's impressive, isn't it?
I've taught you well.
Yeah. Well, and not to mention, so Ryan White was here and did a previous podcast episode, and I asked him about blue sky days. He was quite impressed that I knew what a blue sky day was,
very
too.
Good.
So I am moving right along in my education of the terminology used with Rappahannock Electric Cooperative.
Love it. So, forced air attic ventilation can be a little tricky. If you have a decent amount of insulation, 6 inches or more, R19 or better, and most homes all now in today's period are R38 mm-hmm. or more. So if you look at that, we're not overly concerned. If the attic is receiving proper natural ventilation, we're not too concerned about the net temperature difference between the attic space and the living space so much. And with forced air attic ventilation, if your attic hatch is leaking, if you have other avenues for infiltration, that mechanical fan is creating a driver. So now you've gone away from natural heat flow to actually creating a different type of influence. So sometimes attic ventilation, I'm just not a big proponent of using it in every case because a lot of homes just aren't really tight enough to do it. And they typically—
to make it worth any kind of savings.
It's just like having ductwork in the attic that's leaking. It's a mechanical fan up there creating a driver or a mechanism or a vehicle, if you will, for infiltration to occur. And you kind of exacerbate it with the attic ventilation. A lot of people always think that's going to help them just because they're lowering that temperature in the attic. And yes, it does to a degree, but it opens up a can of worms to a whole other avenue. You know, infiltration is not a bad thing until it starts happening.
Right.
So if there's a mechanical driver there in place, obviously that's going to create an influence on the house that we don't want to have. So a lot of people will think that's a good thing, but it's not. That's one of those. It can be okay, but it's not always a good thing.
So that's three. Can you pull one more?
Absolutely.
Give me one more and we'll wrap up the episode. All right, give me one more.
Talking about adding more insulation to your house. People will blindly think if I just go up there and I add more insulation to the house, I'm going to save energy. Not necessarily so. Be very judicious and careful about how you go about doing that. Have somebody inspect the insulation if you're really, really concerned about what your attic looks like from an insulation standpoint. There's contractors out there that can do that. You can give us a call at the office and we can potentially, you know, swing out there and take a look at things for you just to give you kind of an unbiased, holistic approach there and say, yes, your insulation's in good shape or it's degraded.
And that's something that Rappahannock offers.
Absolutely.
I mean, you guys offer that to come out and
we'll do a quick inspection for my house.
We'll do
walkthroughs and things of that nature to kind of help our members make some sound decisions moving forward or before they were to solicit to do any work. But you got to be careful. 6 inches of attic insulation, R19, which was done back in early days, you know, early construction days, you know, in the 80s and even late 70s in most cases, will stop about 90% of the heat loss out of the house. So you're chasing down that last 10% every inch you go over that. So it's going to come down to more or less what kind of shape is your insulation in? Is it degraded? Is it pushed down? Has it become wind washed? Is it not coming in contact with the attic floor? Can you see all the trusses up there in the attic assembly? That means you probably don't have 6 inches up there.
Ah, okay.
So, you know, what does it look like for one? Has it degraded? If it's not, fine. You know, if you want to add a little bit, you can, but be careful about how much you spend doing so. So, you know, the typical house, let's just take a 1500 square foot ranch house and you had R19 and you want to, you know, put 6 or 8 inches on top of that. Most companies, that's going to range in price depending on who you mm-hmm. get to do that. So you have to be very careful about what you're spending because what you're going to save is about 1-3% annually on your heating and cooling portion of your bill. So not your whole bill, just
right.
the heating and cooling
just
portion
that part of
your bill.
Of it.
So it's kind of I'm not going to say a negative because there is a return there, but it can be a diminished return depending on what.
Because you really
you
need
spend.
To do look at the bigger picture
right.
because, like you said, that wouldn't have occurred to me either. That impact is only going to be on those two factors, not across the
right.
entire use of your energy in the entire home.
Exactly. So be, you know, be careful about that when you go about thinking about adding insulation. Or, you know, make sure that you're doing some air sealing along with that, you know, with that measure, because air sealing and insulation go hand in hand.
Well, I've got one for you that we've talked about before, but I don't think we can talk about it enough because it was another one of those things where I had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to wrap up with this last common misconception. In the winter, if I put my hand up to my window and I feel air or think I feel air blowing on my hand, that does not necessarily mean I need to rip all the windows out and replace them in my house.
I eloquently danced around the window topic because it's always a hot item. You know, we talked about before that the windows and doors on the main level of the house, typically speaking, are going to have less impact on infiltration.
Right.
Because they're essentially what we call in the neutral plane.
Mm-hmm.
So everything up high, everything down low has the biggest influence. Windows are one of those things that they're a little tricky. If they're not closing properly and they're not locking properly, or it's a double hung window and the top sash starts to drop down after you've locked it, and there's plenty of windows out there that don't function well, yes, you need to do something to seal them up a little bit more, whether it's a film kit, whether it's just actually repairing the window, whether it's adding some weather stripping, you know, whatever it may be. When you put your hand in front of the glass, there's what's called a convective loop in front of every window. And that convective loop, you have to realize, what is our body temperature, argumentatively 97, 98
something, yeah, 98.6 or something,
or so.
Yeah.
Everybody runs a little bit different here and there. But what temperature do you think the glass is on a really cold winter day?
Oh, yeah, it's probably in the 40s or 50s.
So with that convective loop, if you were to drop your hand below the sill, you would feel it. It would be colder, and as you move up the window, it would be a little warmer. Well, that's that convective loop that you're feeling, and when you put your hand in front of the glass, you're actually essentially creating a draft between your body and the glass because your body heat—
You become the conductor.
Right. Your body heat is being drawn to the cold glass. So a lot of people will think they feel it. The best way to go about that is to, one, get a windy day,
mm-hmm.
a day that you know you have some breeze on that side of the house, or if you're concerned about it, take an incense stick or a candle and then blow it out, and then watch what the smoke does. If the smoke just meanders around the frame of the window and around the sashes, it's not doing it. Now, if it starts to
move,
blow
and
inward
actually,
or suck inward, if you will, then yeah, you've got something going on there. And you can typically feel that, quantify it with your hand. But when you put your hand in front of that glass, you're merely interrupting the convective loop, and you become a conductor, and you're creating a draft.
I think that was one of the first things that you taught me that just fascinated me because I had no idea.
Yeah,
we have an old house with old wooden windows, and which mine probably aren't. Yes, I am conducting a certain amount of it, but I'm fairly certain too those windows need to be replaced. But like you said, inspections will give you a lot of the answers that you need for whether or not you need to replace or just maybe do a couple of fixes.
And a lot of homes have ductwork that's located in unconditioned spaces and things like that. So, you know, if there are leaks, which a lot of times they're not 100% sealed, especially as we move backwards in era of construction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now it's been code for a while that all the ductwork shall be sealed, and it's been a few years or so. It doesn't necessarily mean it always happens on a project, but, you know, typically you can actually even cut the blower on your HVAC system, and you can maybe cut on a couple of exhaust fans in the bathrooms and things like that, cut your range hood on if it's ducted to the outside, and you can actually create enough negative influence there to actually maybe even quantify some true leakage around the windows if you have. So there's little things that you can do in your house without connecting the blower door, without depressurizing the house to a large degree. There's things that every homeowner can do if they're concerned about their windows to kind of just see what's going on.
Awesome.
And a good windy day, a day where you have some temperature difference between outside and inside, those are always good times to check windows and doors.
Thank you. I've several new common misconceptions that now you've busted for me, so I appreciate it.
Sounds good.